Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode is brought to you by Harrah's Resort SoCal. Nestled against a rolling hillside and just down the road from Palomar Mountain, guests at Harrah's Resort SoCal can expect gorgeous views, friendly staff, available night and day to encourage everyone to have a great time. When I was there recently, I had a chance to dine at California's first and the nation's largest Hell's Kitchen. And it's true, the beef Wellington and sticky toffee dessert are great. The restaurant is inspired by the hit TV show and features a menu approved by the Michelin star celebrity chef Gordon Ramsay himself. Hope to see you all at Harrah's Resort SoCal in 2024.
My name is Tengu. I was born and raised in Hanoi. I am known for being an ultra endurance athlete. Do races are quite challenging. Races that take up to like a week or two. I do want to put Vietnam on the map. Vietnamese endurance community is still very small, but is making an impact in the global arena.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over the world.
Wonderful. What does it mean to be Vietnamese to you?
It took me a while because, you know, I was born and raised in Hanoi, but then I went to study overseas at the age of 13. So I studied for a little bit in Singapore and then in Canada and then in the UK. And then I also worked for a few years in Singapore after my graduation. So then, you know, I was up until I was like about 24. I spent like 24, 25, like I spent pretty much like a split, even 50-50 in Vietnam and overseas. And then I started to have a little bit of identity crisis. And, you know, and a lot of even my friends, some of my friends said that I'm not very Vietnamese. And then my friends from where I was living, I'm not fully from there either. So then definitely a little bit of identity crisis there. But after I came back to start doing endurance stuff, I really understand more what it means to be Vietnamese. First and foremost, I think it's the grit. I think it runs in the blood. And grit is something that helps me through a lot of my endurance challenges, but also in life. It always kind of propelled me forward, always wanting to just try a little bit harder, try a little bit more. I think that's not unique to me. A lot of people think that, oh, if I'm able to do all these races, it means that I have like something different, you know, I'm gifted or something, but that's completely not true. My coach has even said that my athletic abilities are not like special. to be kind. I am very determined and gritty. So, and I see that in daily lives. You know, you see, you've been to Vietnam, you experience the lives here. Everyone, you know, wake up at like 4 a.m. in the morning, driving their, shipping their ingredients to their customers so that they can open for breakfast at like 5:30 or 6. You know, they work very hard, always hustling. That's what I love about being in Vietnam, the energy.
I was just going to ask you, what the grit that you're referring to, where does that come from? Is it something that, you know, but you kind of touched on it, which is, do you think that it is coming out from the cultural sort of words and out of people's mouths, like your family, the culture? Or do you think that what you kind of answered by, you go on the streets in Vietnam and you see it, you see examples of the determination, whereas you go into Western countries and that sort of doesn't exist anymore because of, you know, they're just further advanced in the economy and, you know, standards of living. It's just different. And they're second generation Vietnamese and overseas is just not functioning as people in Vietnam because of the intensity of the life that they have to go through.
Yeah, I definitely think it's part culture and also part history, right? Vietnam generally have a difficult history for thousands of years, not just through the French occupation and the war with the U.S. But even before that, you know, it was part of China for not a very long time. And to break away and to become like an independent country with a different language, that takes a lot of grit. That's the spirit of never giving up, you know, and in a country of, you know, close to 100 million people, life is difficult. And everyone sort of like always do their best, like the energy, not just like, you know, if you have a difficult life, then you have to work hard, but also like even with the younger generation, they're very talented. And they get to expose to the world quite more easily now with technology and everything. So, they take the opportunity to really work hard and propel themselves as well. You see, like I'm away for 2 weeks and I come back, like things have changed, like new buildings have popped up, new restaurants, new shops have popped up. And what I admired the most here is like when I came back to Vietnam, right? Everyone has like 2 or 3 jobs. Like side gigs and constantly hustling, like constantly like just kind of find ways to challenge themselves. And I think that's absolutely just, I'm amazed and I really respect that.
Yeah. You know, for a lot of the diaspora in the United States, people that are my age or younger who haven't been much back to Vietnam, sometimes we have this idea of people in Vietnam, and the ideas of the people of Vietnam rarely look and sound like you. And I'm constantly amazed at the amount of people that look like you and sound like you, which this is what I'm saying, is that there are people that I ran into 10 years ago, 15 years ago in Vietnam that spoke perfect English, like they had lived overseas, but they never left the country. There's so many. And then for you, I mean, because we've spoken in Vietnamese before, your Vietnamese is perfect Northern Vietnamese. It's like, if people can't imagine that there is sort of this duality that exists in Vietnam now, where it's like perfect English, perfect Vietnamese. And there's no, like, there's no fucking around now. You know, people are extremely well, you know, able to communicate in both these languages at a very high level. And you're one of the, you know, proof of that. And, you know, I just wanted to call that out before we move into the athletic stuff. Do you find that a lot of your peers that exist in the world that you do, which is perfect English, perfect Vietnamese. Is there a lot of that going on in Vietnam?
Like right now, I see that it's an interesting observation because I observe it myself. I experience it myself as well. Back then, like maybe 20 years ago, you would only get that duality if the kids go to international school and such, right? And I actually never went to an international school while I was in Vietnam. But yes, I did sort of shifted into an English system at a fairly young age. So it was helpful for me to kind of adapt to a new language. But you're right, there are people who are a little bit more grown up when they started to work on their English or their international, there's globalization skills. I have a friend who's an MC, so like master of ceremony, like talk show host. She started working on her English when I first met her. That was in 2015. And now she has perfected it. And I think it has, of course, like she has to work very hard. And you know, she also kind of find the necessary exposure. Like she would go to events, she would like really put herself out there to get the practice, right? Like 20 years ago when I started learning English, a lot of it was in like a very like controlled classroom environment. A lot of it focuses on grammar and written English. So you can be really good at written and English and reading comprehension. But when it comes to practicing it, there's like a huge gap. But nowadays, like I feel that that's why I love the energy in Vietnam. Like people really push hard to improve their skills. And you see a lot more like people who has never left Vietnam, but are so talented, so international. And I really admire that. I think that's what we need to encourage. But yeah, a lot of people of the older generation, they sometimes say like, oh yeah, because you get like the exposure, you get the opportunity. But no, like I think as long as you work hard at it,
yeah,
you definitely can.
Yeah, definitely. I can't tell you how many examples of that I've encountered in the early days, like 10, 15 years ago in Vietnam. Like, you know, it's everywhere. It's everywhere in Vietnam. And, you know, it's not what we think of it in the United States sometimes. So we think like, you know, these people in Vietnam are so far, you know, into the Vietnamese culture that they have no idea what, no, there's people who can speak fluent. And probably the vocabulary in English, sometimes people in Vietnam have more vocabulary than, you know, the people that I know, because it's just the amount of reading and the researching and the hard work that they have to do to be able to compete on an international level outside of Vietnam is far more greater than we in America is like competing, you know.
Just think about the numbers, right? Like, I mean, close to 100 million people, even just 1% is already a million people. So if you're like competing, you're like, yeah, you got to give it your own. And that's what I love. And I think like for me, when I do these kind of like endurance challenges, right, it's not about competing in that 1% or anything, or being like in the 0.001% of the people who can do it in the world in Vietnam, but rather I feel like it is a way to expand the arena. For a lot of Vietnamese, maybe they're very talented. They're just so talented and I admire them so much. But they could have some sort of insecurity because they haven't gotten the exposure or they haven't had the opportunity to really step out there. But when there is someone that they know or they can relate to or they feel like closer to their situation, then they can kind of like get the courage to go forward. So being the first is not about being the best or being the fastest, right? Like the reason why everything I do, I always look if I can be like the first female from Asia or the first Vietnamese or the first female Vietnamese, because I think when someone has opened the way, has paved the way, and has proved that something can be done, then people will be more willing to test themselves and to push further. And that's how we can make our marks in the world, right? Like when I started ultra running, that was around 2014, 2015, the Vietnamese community in the ultra world was very small. Like you can probably count them on your fingers. But now like we have races that have like thousands and thousands of people. Wow. And just the communities are amazing. Yeah, like the race that we have in Sapa called Vietnam Mountain Marathon. It's just like even like a 42K trail running. It's just thousands of people line up. It's just so exciting. And people are more open to ideas. Like they are more open to new challenges. Like I think there's something quite great about physical challenges. It can really replicate life in a compact and condensed format. You go through the highs, you go through the lows, you go through the doubts, you go through the fear, you have the support from the community, you make new friends, you find strength that you didn't know you have. All of those, like you can experience that in like a marathon or in a ultra trail races. And I think that's what draw a lot of people to it. I mean, in general, like I, people think like, oh, if you're able to. So what I did in August just now was
Can we talk about that? Can we let's put that in context for people to understand? Like at this point, because having the story of what you just did in August, like what that event is, will give people context of what, like who we're talking to, right? I mean, like the
you want my rap sheets, basically.
Yeah, and then we can get into the history of how you got into it. But let's talk about the accomplishment, what that was.
Okay, so in August, that was what I did was call a ultra triathlon race. The distance is the DECA continuous format. DECA means like 10 times, right? 10. So it's 10 times the normal Ironman distance. So a normal Ironman distance is 3.8 kilometer swim, 180 kilometer cycle, and 42K run. So
okay,
you finish off with a marathon.
Down in miles. It's a 26.2 mile run, which is deadly because that is no joke, right? So we're talking 26.2 times 10. That's 260 mile run, right?
Yeah. And then 262 miles run.
Yeah, 262. Let's not forget the 2 miles.
Yeah.
Once you multiply 0.2, it goes to Okay. And then you go 3.2 kilometers, which is a mile. Is that a mile swim?
I know that like Ironman in miles is 140.6 miles in total. So like the total distance. The swim 3.8. So that's like a little more than 2 miles, I think. And then the cycle leg is 1,800 kilometer. So that is what? Oh my God, that's
that's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot. By 10, yeah. Now, just to put into context for people who are listening, Ironman competitions are brutal. I've ran 9 marathons, and the marathons are they take a lot out of you to train for them and to do them. And but when you throw swimming and cycling in, it's another beast. But then you take that all and you multiply that by 10. that's what's like mind bending for me. It's like, you know, so that's crazy. That's just some crazy grit right there. And how long do you have to complete a DECA?
So a DECA continuous format. So there's also like the one per day format, meaning you do one Ironman distance a day for like 10 days in a row. But the format that I did was continuous. So you have to finish like all the distance in the swim first before you move to the cycling and then you move to the running. So honestly, like I got to tell you, I'm still very, very new to the world of triathlon. I've been doing endurance stuff for a while, but mostly in running and trails and stuff. But triathlon is something super new to me. And this is actually I actually have never done an Ironman. But yeah, when I sign up for the DECA, it's like, you know, half of me is like, yeah, you've done a lot of endurance stuff. Like you've got this. You are like an endurance athlete. You know, you just break it down into smaller chunks, you'll be fine. But the other half is like, what the fuck am I thinking? Like, who do you think I am? Like,
But if you break it down to smaller chunks, I mean, okay, even if you break it down to smaller, okay, because even if you break it down to smaller chunks, you're still doing a whole triathlon, and the next day you have to do a whole, you know, it's still a lot. And
thing is, like, it's very interesting how the mind works. I also learn a lot with this experience as well, right? Like, okay, so when I the 38K swim, right? That's long. That's a long time in the water, man. and because all of these ultra triathlon races have to, because they are so long, everything are like in loops, so they can control and they can like watch you. And it's also a lot of safety issues. Mm-hmm. In an Ironman, it can be out in the open water, or it can also, the bike course and the run course can be long, but because when it goes so long, like they can't block the road for like 2 weeks, right? So, mm-hmm. So they would have to do it in loops. And so I did the swim in the 15 meters pool, along with like 23 other competitors. And then the bike ride is 9 kilometer loops. And then the run is 1.2 kilometer loop. So it's less than a mile. And so for the biking segment, we did 200 laps. For the run, it's 346 laps. So for me, when like a few years ago, right, someone wanted to invite me to a marathon that has two loops. So basically the marathon is a double loop of the half marathon. I was like, I have no interest in that, like zero. I do like a lot of these things because I want to see the place, like experience. Like, you know, when I did, when I ran New York, it was like a great way to see, you know, the fibers and experience the life, like the people there and things like that. But like running like double loop somewhere just gives me like no interest. But when I signed up for this goal, it was just so incredibly like big and difficult that like anything else, like all these little like mind blocks became like very trivial. And of course, like, you know, it's also another thing that I can be the first female from Asia. I can be the first female from Vietnam. I'm actually the first Vietnamese to do this, but I like to highlight the female bits because, you know, I think a lot of people, especially from the Asian culture, female representation in sports or in fields that are a little bit different are still kind of looked at as like, why, you know, like, why are you torturing yourself? Like, you should aim for like a nice, comfy life and things like that. And my way of living is that, like, you know, it's about choices. I'm not saying everyone needs to be this way or that way. I think that the most important thing to help women like be the best that they can be is to provide them with all the choices, and they feel that they are supported in whatever they want to do. Like if they want to be a lawyer working like 100 hours a week, or if they want to be a super successful like entrepreneur who like never have like a personal life, or like a housewife who like raise like amazing kids, like all of those that, you know, to them, they're great. Like from the outside looking in, we tend to have a lot of judgment. We tend to say like, oh, that's too much. That's not good. That's not healthy. Blah, blah, blah. I think what I do is not healthy either. But
you were single-handedly destroying this idea of like Yachung or Chongchuoba, right? Like you're breaking the spelling. Right, of course. Yeah. But what modern Vietnamese woman should take that, or you know, that's an out.
They want to marry rich and get taken care of. That's up to them. Like let them decide. Like, you know, like men shouldn't decide for them. Other women shouldn't decide for them. Like it's like I'm not men hating or saying like, no, oh, no. Like Zachung or like the Patrick, I can never pronounce
patriarchy.
That. Like,
patriarchy.
Yeah, patriarchy. I'm not like, you know,
bashing on it. Yeah.
Patriarchy or whatever. It's about choices. It's about support. It's about choices. Yes. Men who support women like to pursue what they want, that's amazing. I've known housewives who've done the races I've done and get the full support from their spouse, and I think like that's so great, you know. That's
beautiful.
That's a great life. That's beautiful. Yeah. It's tough, by the way, to be married to someone who or to be in a relationship with someone who want to do these kind of challenges. And you know, it's again, like anything you want to do with like your whole heart and mind is difficult. Like whether it's your job or like a hobby or your passion project, I think like it can be consuming and obsessive in a way. So if you find like a strong support system, it's okay. Very, yeah. It's very good. Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Now, when you're doing these loops on the Deca, what are you doing to occupy your mind, your brain space? Because you can't focus, or you got to get your mind off the pain and off the routine. Just you have to like distract yourself somehow, or do you put on music, or do you really just embrace the pain and the boring aspect? What goes on mechanically in your brain?
So like before, right? Like when I started, a long time ago, in 2014, when I did my first ultra, which was like 100 kilometer, I was like, oh, I need music. I was like looking to like get many charger or like music player and things to make sure that I have music through the entire run. But then I think around 70K or something, like everything died. But then at that point, it didn't matter. I was just like, I want to finish. Like I feel like if I can do this, I can do anything. And that thought just kind of keep me going. And from then on, strangely, I didn't need to listen to music anymore. Like, I mean, sometimes I would, but it's actually really good to kind of just be present with the moment and things like that. During the, like, I did many desert races before as well. So like multi-stage, very long races is like out in the desert. So of course, like no electricity, like no running water, and the water supply is extremely limited every day. So then, you know, like some people still try to bring small like MP3 players or charger. And I just want to cut all the unnecessary weight. But I also didn't need to kind of listen to music anymore, because I would think about like, oh, like, you know, the scenery is so beautiful, or these people are amazing, or like, you know, I'm just having like conversation with myself in my head, get very philosophical out there when you're like running alone under like thousands of stars and things like that. But with this Deka, I think I also kind of mature a little bit in terms of like my ability to focus. So the Deka is, the ultra triathlon is also very different from the other races that I've done. It's held in a town called Bux in Switzerland, right? So it's still like in a town, it's still like in an area that's very accessible to all the like luxury of normal life. So we still have electricity, we still have like water facilities, all that good stuff. So we can listen to as much music or have as much like electronics as we desire. But for me, what I appreciate is that I can use the Theragun as I needed. But I also didn't listen to music. I think I mature in the sense that I was able to focus on just like the road, like how my posture is, my position, are my stride or are my hips balanced? Like when I'm running, like is my posture good enough, like to prevent like any oncoming like any potential injuries? So. Because the distance is so long, and that's like the longest race I've done. It spanned over close to 2 weeks. It took me 328 hours, 27 minutes, and 55 seconds to finish. So that's over 13 days. So you need to be able to prevent any injuries to finish. Like once you already get the hang of things, right, you almost like can maintain and sustain yourself. Just think of it as like a car. Like if you constantly, even if you have very little gas, but you constantly put in more gas at the right level, you can still keep driving. The danger comes when it's like completely out of gas. And restarting is super difficult. So like in my mind, I kind of applied the same principle. Just keep drinking, keep eating at the right interval. Take care of the problems before it becomes a problem. So I'm quite careful like that. So, you know, throughout like the whole 422 kilometers, I think my mind was just kind of like, thinking about, okay, so this road is actually not very flat. It has like a slight tilt. and I need to place my foot here, here, and here. How's my stride? Are my arms relaxed? Things like that. So it's very different from the thoughts that I would sometimes have in the desert, like in the desert or like in the Arctic Circle. I'd be like, oh, like how lucky am I to be running under like the aurora? How many chances, even though I was like freezing to death, I was like, this is so freaking cold. I underpacked for how cold it's gonna be. I thought it was gonna be, my friends did it the years before and they were like, oh, it's only like -16, -17, but strong wind. So I was packing for that, but it dropped to like -30, -35. And I was like a frozen popsicle. And some part of it was very miserable. My toes were all like, I don't have good circulation in my extremities. So for me, that was a little bit uncomfortable. But, you know, I got to have thoughts like, oh, yeah, like how many people get to do this? You know, how many people get to safely do this? And in an organized race, like just loving the aurora, like people would be able to see it for maybe like a few hours, you know, or like a few minutes. I get to run under it for hours on end. So it's not too bad, right? So things like that keep me going, just little funny thoughts like that. But in the DECA, I feel like I also mature a little bit in terms of the athletic ability to focus, because all I want, like all I care about is to get to the finish line. It is still, to think back, I'm like, now that I've done it, I'm more calm when I think about the distance and whatnot. But before that, I was like, oh my God, what the hell? Like 38 kilometers, like, okay, I have to, the time limit for the swim lake is 27 hours. So I'm like, okay, I have a day to finish the swim. It's okay, I can do it. I have practice, I have long swim to practice and I'm within that time limit, no problem. There's issues like the cold water and the rain, all that, but nothing that you can't deal with. But then like the cycle leg was like something I've never done before. So long, 1800 kilometer. And in my head, I was like, okay, just break it down. So say I do it in like 9 days and it's 200 kilometer a day. That's not so bad. Okay. But 9 days only leave me with like 4 days to run, you know, 10 marathons. So that's a little bit tight, you know? So I need to compress it down. Okay. So I arrive at a more reasonable distance, which is about 237 kilometer a day. So I can finish it in like just over 6 days, close to 7 days. And then I would have much more time. Like I'm not, and then I'll, like, if I can put my feet on the ground, I can definitely finish the run. But then, you know, the rain came and it was terrible. It was like raining for like 24 hours one day. And it was so cold. It was right next to the Rhine River. So like, it felt like someone was like splashing like ice buckets, like for hours. And you know, like anything, even if the weather wasn't that bad, but like when you're like out there for so long, everything just like
compounded.
And yeah, it felt so much worse. Probably like if someone just do like one Ironman distance there, they probably like, oh, it was like chill. But yeah, it was so crazy. I was like, at one point I changed into my wetsuit because everything was just so wet, like nothing was drying in time, and I was just cycling in the wetsuit, and it was just so uncomfortable, so slippery and everything. And instead of doing 30 laps a day, which is, you know, 9 kilometers per lap, instead of getting to 30 laps a day, I got 3 laps in that day.
Wow.
Like 3 laps, like it was already like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. I got 3 laps in. I was freaking out. I was kind of like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to finish. Like if this keep happening, like I would have to keep making up more laps in the following days. And there's just no way I'll be able to do this. And I was like crying, bawling my eyes out, and just like, what do I do? And then, but you know, like, that's the thing about being like able to cry it out. Like, you're, I guess, like, once your emotions get processed, your mind become a lot clearer. And then I was like, okay, all right. So if the weather's bad, I'm just going to flip my clock. I'm not going to follow the, you know, like, try to get as much done during the day and then sleep at night. I'm just going to swap my clock to adapt it to the weather. I'm going to sleep when it rains the hardest. And then when it's better, like at night, at night, it's much easier to cycle. The wind dies, even though it's a little colder, but it's not windy. It's a huge plus. So I cycle through the night. Like, I slept like around early morning or at noon, little naps. I finished the cycle legs in about 7.5 days. And then, so that leaves me with about 5 days to finish the run, which is very manageable for me at that point.
10 marathons in 5 days.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just keep thinking, oh, like, I'm an ultra runner. Like, that's my strong suit, right? Opinion. That's my background. I was so miserable during the cycling leg that I promised myself, no matter what happens, when it comes to the run leg, I will not complain. Mm. And people commented on that too. It's like, dang, like, you look completely different when you cycle and when you run. Like, when you run, you're like so happy. You cycle, like, your face is just like, oh, get me out of here.
How much sleep are you getting every day?
So it's a little bit different every day. So the first day, like, no sleep, because you only have 27 hours, and I'm a slow swimmer. A lot of people, like, there was like really incredible, like, just, you know, like, people in Vietnam, when they heard about this achievement, they're like, oh my God, you're like a superhuman, you're like out of this world, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, when I'm there, I feel like, well, when I'm there, I'm so far from, like, the first guy, the first male athlete. They finished like in over 8 days. I think it's like 182 hours, something. So he was like all recovered and all good, and I'm still cycling, and just so funny. There's a guy who finished the Deca, so he came second in the Deca, and then he rests for like a day, and then he immediately after that went for the quintuple, which is 5 Ironmen, one a day. So within that 14 days, he finished 15 Ironman distance equivalent. Yeah. I made it through 10, and I feel so proud. But yeah, he's incredible, just amazing. And they're all very normal people, you know, like, people think that, oh, these guys need to be like super athlete or like cover of GQ magazine and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, maybe there's like one or two people who are like that, but the ultra triathlon community is still so new and so niche that like no one is really like a professional, you know, semi-professional at best. Maybe one or two or three, or just very few. The rest are like more like me. Like, we have full-time jobs, and also have, like, a lot of them have families. Yeah. I don't know how they do it, but that guy who did 15 Ironman distance equivalent, he has like a 6-year-old daughter as well, who he really spent a lot of time with. He's like, she would, like, his wife would come to support, like, sort of, you know, the logistics and whatnot. And the kid are there. And even though, like, you know, after so many hours and so many kilometers he went through that day, he still like spent time with his daughter playing, putting her to bed. And I was like, yeah, you know, that's kind of like the life like I want, you know. I don't want to be a professional athlete, or I don't want to be just an athlete, you know. I do want to put more meaning into my life with different things. And I always get so inspired doing these kind of challenges. Personal challenge is one thing, you know, paving the way is great. But also to really be inspired and to kind of retell the tales as well. So there are four women who participated in the race to finish. And the other woman who finished is a 60-year-old French lady who is a former breast cancer patient. Right. Yeah, she's a cancer survivor. So, and she only started after she got diagnosed and get treated, and she was already in her 50s.
Now, in terms of like a team that supports you out there, is there like a team that you have to have out there to take care of logistics and food and whatever for you by your side while you're doing the race?
Well, you can have crew if you want. Most people have different level of support. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was also freaking out because I was like, who would spend, you know, like 2 weeks helping me? Like all my friends and everyone, like they are amazing, but they all have jobs and responsibilities in life. So it was very difficult and I was freaking out. But I was very lucky within the ultra running community. We're also like very tight knit and very supportive of each other. And I was very lucky that one of my friends were on his way to another race. And he actually supported me for the first 7 days. So the support comes in the form of like, you know, sort of just all the behind the scene stuff, like, getting the nutrition ready and stuff. Of course, you can do it by yourself, but every minute it's kind of add up, you know? Like, you see, like, imagine if I'm running, like, 200 laps. Every laps, mm-hmm. I need to spend, like, a few minutes to do things, and it adds up, and it eats into my recovery time and my sleeping time, which is super important in these things. And so, you know, if you have someone to kind of just help you, arrange, like make all the drinks, like, you know, mix protein powder, mix the electrolyte, get the salt pills ready and just be out there, and you can just go by and grab them. You don't have to stop and like refill the bottle and things like that. And of course you also have like really high, performance athlete, they would have like a five person crew or like a 9-person crew with like RV camping out and things like that, because they are very high performance. Every minute's count for them, every second's count, right? So you can get support at different levels and whatever you can arrange. Like most people just family members, because that's where you can like you can get that unconditional love.
Yeah. Did your parents come out for it?
I never tell my parents like until I finish.
Wow.
Because you know, like my parents get worried. They're more used to it now. But like in the deserts and stuff like that, like, you know, it's not easy communication. So you're away, you are MIA for like a week or 10 days, and they get very worried. So I'm generally just kind of tell them like, oh, afterward, or sometimes they read it in the newspaper or like someone tells them that they heard about it or read about it.
I have two questions. We're coming up on an hour here, and It went by very quick because there's so many things I want to ask you. But what's next for you? What kind of challenge, if it's not ultra or athletic, do you think that there's another thing in store for you? Because you're a fairly young person. Is there something like in like music or art or writing a book or what's next? What's the next challenge? Is there a next challenge? Or are you gonna keep going on this road of ultra endurance sports?
Yeah, I mean, look at Nadine, right? Look at the lady who's 60-year-old and still doing these things. Like, I'm definitely aiming for that. Like, I want to be well into like my advanced age and still knocking down these races because I really enjoy them. I think like they give me a lot of really enriching experience to become a better person. And also like the experience that I get and the stories and things that I can witness, I can really retell that and inspire more people to make their mark in the world. And yeah, definitely a lot of people think that, oh, like this is the DECA was like my highest achievement. So it was the world championship. So, and I finished first, so I am now the female world champion in the DECA continuous distance. So people think like, oh, that is that it? Like you're gonna like calm down now. But honestly, like it was a bonus that I won. All I wanted to do when I signed up was to break myself into a new field. You know, I want to get myself more acquainted with like with the environment, get into like a new communities as well, really interesting people. But for sure, it's not going to be the last races. My motto is always like be the best version of yourself, and that the best version of this year is not going to be the same as the best version of next year and the year after that. So it's always moving upward like that. So definitely double DECA, which is double the distance, is not out of the question. I also have friends who, because I've done multi stages that are, you know, 250 kilometer, 522 kilometers, and, you know, 500 kilometer continuous format is also not out of the questions. Also, I have a friend who's trying to get me to think about 1,000 kilometer run. So those are not out of the questions, but what I think where I'm actually need to really step up is to connect these endurance challenges with things that can give values to the community. So I have I'm very lucky that I have really good mentors, and they always kind of find ways to challenge me. I think my next biggest challenge that I'm really scared about, like I'm not scared about, you know, the 500K race or the 1,000 kilometer race as much as I'm like worrying about this one. This is like where I would cycle across the country through like the 28 provinces in Vietnam, 28 coastal provinces in Vietnam to raise awareness in terms of circular economy of plastic pollution and how we need to change our behavior. That change in behavior is really important. I think like stopping at raising awareness is a little lacking at the moment. We're not like, it's not 20 years ago where we can say, yeah, like be aware and whatnot. Like now is the time to change behavior and to act. So the initiative is to actually get people to start recycle, to sort their garbage correctly and recycle. So like in Europe, they have done a great job of it. And even that they are doing such a good job, like climate change is still going to be a huge problem for all the European countries. Vietnam is one of the six Southeast Asia countries that produce like more plastic pollution more than the 20-something European countries combined.
Wow. So,
really? Yeah. So, mm-hmm. And I work for a beverage company, right? And it's one of the big three in Vietnam, a very successful Vietnamese company. And we are also thinking about like, yes, we need to recycle. We have a lot of, we definitely like can, we need to be part of the circular economy. Plastic is only waste if we don't sort correctly, we don't collect them, and we don't recycle them. If we can bring it back as like raw ingredients for something else to make like even this table that I'm sitting at, right? Like it's wood mixed with plastic. You see clothing made from plastic flakes as well. Well, that can, depending on how you make it, that can cause some problems. But like luggages, like things like, there's so many things that you can actually recycle. But at a national scale, it needs to happen very quickly. And a lot of people think that, oh yeah, climate change or plastic pollution, those things belong to, should fall under the responsibility of the institution, of the government. Like individuals can't do much, you know? But again, like you think 422 kilometers is a lot, or like 262 miles is a lot. But you do 1 mile repeatedly over and over again, you get that big distance. It's nothing fancy. It's nothing out of this world. Mm-hmm. You have 100 million people. Everyone reduced a little bit. Everyone changed their ways and sort and recycle. It makes a huge difference. So right now, like per capita, each Vietnamese produce about 4.7 kilos of plastic pollution, plastic waste that actually leak into the environment. So yeah, times it by 100 million, that's huge.
Yeah.
So just, you know, find ways. Don't leave it for others. Don't think it's other people's responsibility. We all need to be part of it. And so I think this challenge is way more difficult than anything that I have done. And I've done a lot of difficult things, but I feel like this is a bigger challenge than any other previous challenges combined, because it involved other people. It involved like, you know, really making a wide scale change. So yeah, I'm very nervous.
I love how the philosophical side of the endurance athletics have creeped into the eco-friendly side of the way that you want to sort of see change in the world. I want to tease out the next time you and I talk in Vietnamese. Is it all right if you tease out the next episode, but say something in Vietnamese? So it's a two-pronged thing for me. It's first of all, I'd like to, you know, introduce people to the next, you know, time that we speak, but I also want people to see how beautiful your language skills is in your native language. And because I just, you know, now I'm sitting here going, you know, we spoke continuously in English, and you've articulated very well the journey that you've gone through, but now I'd love to get some words in Vietnamese if you don't mind.
Yeah. Đối với Thanh thì rất nhiều người nghĩ rằng là những cái thách thức mà Thanh làm trước đây rất là khó, nó tưởng như là không thường và không thể. Nhưng mà thực ra đối với Thanh, khi mà Thanh tiếp cận những cái thách thức đó thì Thanh không bao giờ nghĩ về những cái con số khổng lồ như là 1000 cây số hay là 522 cây số hay 250 cây số, mà Thanh sẽ chia nhỏ ra và Thanh sẽ làm tốt nhất những gì có thể để mà đạt được cái cột mốc, rồi sau đó mình mới nghĩ tiếp tới cái cột mốc tiếp theo. Thì như vậy sẽ rất là dễ dàng hơn, nhưng mà chúng ta nghĩ rằng là chúng ta có thể vượt qua được 10 cây hay không. Ok, có thể vượt qua được 10 cây là 6 6 dặm đó. Thì vượt qua 10 cây đó rồi thì 10 cây tiếp theo, tính 10 cây tiếp theo. Và thực ra thì đôi khi mình mệt mỏi là mình kiệt quệ tới nỗi mà đôi khi mình chỉ cần phải tập trung vào một bước tiếp theo thôi. Đã có những lúc như vậy rồi, mình tập trung vào từng bước một như vậy. Và Thanh nghiệm ra rằng là những điều phi thường thực ra chỉ là những cái điều bình thường được lặp đi lặp lại một cách kiên trì và không bao giờ bỏ cuộc. Thì đối với Thanh, những cái thách thức tiếp theo thì vẫn sẽ có những cái thách thức mang tính bền bỉ. Thế nhưng mà thách thức lớn nhất mà Thanh nghĩ rằng tất cả chúng ta đều đang đối mặt với đó chính là biến đổi khí hậu. Và khi mà chúng ta đối mặt mặt với cái thách thức to lớn như vậy, thì một lần nữa chúng ta chia nhỏ nó ra. Thanh sẽ cố gắng đóng góp để làm sao có thể giảm thiểu được ô nhiễm nhựa, giảm thiểu được cái lượng nhựa rò rỉ ra môi trường và đem nó quay trở về với kinh tế tuần hoàn để tạo ra giá trị mới cho cuộc sống, cho cộng đồng. Và đấy cũng là một cái thách thức mà sắp tới Thanh sẽ đạp xe qua 28 tỉnh ven biển ở Việt Nam để có thể tăng cường nhận biết cũng như là xây dựng hành vi và thói quen hoàn toàn mới cho người dân Việt Nam, để chúng ta có thể cùng nhau làm những điều bình thường ngày một tốt hơn và biến nó thành một cái kết quả phi thường.
Hôm nay, Kenneth, cảm ơn Thanh. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to the next time that we get back to the Vietnamese episode. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. It's my pleasure. Thank you for spending the time with me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. The Vietnamese is produced by Brittany Tran. Special thanks to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trin. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast. You can also find us on YouTube, where you can subscribe, like, and comment. Please rate and give us a review wherever you find our podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.